Hello, and welcome to the Bloodstream Podcast, a show serving the greater bleeding disorders community, brought to you by Believe Limited and Bloodstream Media, and made possible thanks to our presenting sponsor, Takeda. I am your patient advocate and host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I am your healthcare advocate, nonprofit nerd, and your other host, Amy Board, reminding you to please speak with a healthcare professional before making any treatment decisions.
On today's show, Amy and I are back from the Hemophilia Federation of America's symposium with some debriefs and takeaways from On the Shoulders of Giants and much more. We're also anticipating the WFH World Congress. By the time this comes out, it'll be in the rearview mirror.
Yep.
In real time, I don't know, I'm leaving tomorrow. When do you leave?
I leave tomorrow.
Oh, we leave tomorrow. Great. Different itineraries. Are you going to Paris first?
No, I think we're going. No, we're going somewhere else. I was going to say, I was like, are you on my flight?
We really do not talk to each other much outside of this show. We also have an I'm Fine segment with my blood brother and pal from across the pond, Luke Pembroke, and our latest Elite Athletes segment featuring elite athletes with bleeding disorders from around the world. Features Redefining Impossible's very own Hazri Aris. We've got all of that and more on today's episode. Welcome to Bloodstream.
Listeners, as always, thank you for joining us today. And if you like what you hear, please share this episode on social media. That would be baller if you shared it. Also, subscribe to the Bloodstream Media Podcast wherever you listen to those podcasts.
I also want to remind you, dear listeners, that the Bloodstream Podcast is made possible by our presenting sponsor, Takeda. Yes, that's right, Takeda. Takeda has got this website, bleedingdisorders.com, where you can learn all about Takeda's resources for and commitment to the bleeding disorders community. They aren't just making resources without commitments over there at Takeda, where they believe in a world free of bleeds, Amy Board.
I love it.
And they're dedicated more than ever in their efforts to offer a wide range of programs and support to help patients throughout their treatment journey, wherever on that journey they may be. You can learn more by simply visiting bleedingdisorders.com. One more time, although, do we need this?
I don't, yeah.
Bleedingdisorders.com. And for their founding and ongoing support of the Bloodstream Podcast, I would just like to say thanks, Takeda.
Thank you, Takeda.
And thank you to segment sponsor Sanofi for supporting I'm Fine and the Elite Athletes segment, as well as On the Shoulders of Giants, which was a big part of this year's HFA Symposium, Amy Board.
I'll go so far as to say that it was the hit of the... You know what? I don't want to say that. I didn't go to the entire symposium, but I will say it was a smash and everybody's talking about it online. How cool is that?
I think it's pretty tremendous, and I would go so far as to say the word hit. I think it was the talk of, the thing.
I do, too.
I'd go so far as to say that we've been in a lot of rooms to screen all sorts of things and for all kinds of events and all sorts of moments. This is up there. Top five, top three, like feelings in the room.
Yeah.
And that transition between the 45-minute film, which you can watch for free right now at ontheshouldersfilm.com, came to an end. And Warren and Wayne, along with you and Drama, the film's director, you the producer, came up on stage. The standing ovation, the emotions and feelings towards Warren and Wayne, the back and forth between them and the audience. And then also getting to watch how Kay and Japneet were in the audience grabbing all sorts of social stuff, like additional surround sound content from it. So there was the community piece, of course, but then there was also the belief piece for me. And I think it's going to be a long, long time till I forget the perspective I had in the side of that room.
Yeah.
Watching the audience, watching you guys up on stage and just soaking in like, wow, we did it with this one. We really did.
I think, you know, what really excites me is I think this film is going to have a lot of legs. And we met with a group of chapters this morning to, you know, kind of lay out some of the program offerings that Believe has.
Tremendous. Another thing I didn't know was going on. I'm so glad we do this podcast, Amy.
But just hearing about like their plans for showing Giants, you can watch it at home right now. Just like, Patrick said, you can literally have a family movie night and watch it. It is such a wonderful snapshot of our history. And I want to actually mention, because she's a listener and I know she's listening right now, Kathy McKay was actually on the show, Oh, several months ago, she was on, listeners, if you remember, with Dana Kuhn. They were talking about COTS efforts to kind of collect archives and build some money for, you know, archives of that time, of the contaminated blood crisis time. And she is, she was a photographer and actually traveled around through the majority of that fight back in the day, in the 80s and early 90s. And her photos, she very lovingly curated for us and let us use so many of her photos in the film. And in my humble opinion, those images just, I think, just elevated the storytelling. She had so many pictures of Warren. I'm getting like goosebumps. She had so many pictures of Warren actually testifying on the steps of Congress. It was so powerful. And so I just want to thank Kathy. She's a listener. I think she'll get like a hoot out of this. But anyway, it was extraordinary. And if you haven't seen it, please watch the movie and tell your friends and get your chapters to do screenings at the local community, because it's important. It's just really important to not forget our history.
And I want to second what you said, Amy. Thank you, Kathy, for those truly elevating assets, so to speak. There was also a fair amount of conversation that I had after the screening on the Thursday of Symposium about what's next. What's interesting is that people will ask sometimes what's next, or what film is next, or what event is next. But this was more like, I hope you do this next. Like, sometimes there's a particular thing that people want. And so they don't so much ask what's next as they ask, I hope next time you're going to focus on blank.
Yeah.
Any guesses, Amy, as to what I was hearing in those conversations when people said, I hope next the next film is all about?
Yes. There's a piece of me that's like, duh, but like maybe it's not duh. Really, I think the issue at hand that we have today is women with mild hemophilia. And women in general, I think, in the healthcare setting, need just like a massive like reframing of how we communicate, both as patients and I think as healthcare providers. But women with mild hemophilia in particular seems to be the thing.
So we have had conversations with our friends at Sanofi who have supported On the Shoulders, Redefining Impossible, Let's Talk, segments on this podcast. Some conversations with other companies as well. There's a lot of interest in this. So, listeners, you know that Believe Limited and Bloodstream Media very much so wants to deliver this next year. If I had to place a bet, I would say we're going to have a film about the experience of women bleeders in the very near future, and more to come as we figure out what exactly that is, how exactly it's happening, where exactly it's going. But message received. And again, thank you to Sanofi for all the support of these kinds of programs. We truly could not do it without you. Again, by the time this comes out, the World Federation of Hemophilia's World Congress, taking place this year in Madrid, Spain, will have come and gone. This is a biannual, every other meeting. It moves every year, different places around the world. Was in Montreal a couple years ago. Amy and I did some podding from that meeting. And I'll be doing some podcast recording at that meeting again this year, although this time it will be for the Global Hemophilia Report. So if you want to hear what's coming out of the Congress this year, at least for me, you're going to have to check out that sister project, globalhemophiliareport.com. But I want to use this, Amy, as an opportunity to profile another or spotlight another project that we just launched, at the risk of turning the opening here into just a bunch of promotion of the stuff we've just launched. We've just launched a bunch of really cool stuff. Beyond Our Blood is a 5-film series that showcases what people with hemophilia around the world are aspiring to do and doing when they're empowered to live beyond their blood. So we met with 5 different patients and families in Puerto Rico, Germany, Egypt, Argentina, and Senegal.
And I should mention the Germany family actually is a Ukrainian family, a Ukrainian refugee family that has found residence in Germany.
And arguably, if it were not for relationships that they had to people in the greater bleeding disorders community, would not have been a refugee family, at least at the time that they were. So just yet another way that being a part of this community is of benefit and support. BeyondOurBlood.com is the website where you can watch each of these. They're each less than 10 minutes long. They are gorgeous. And they truly give you a beautiful window into the experiences of hemophilia in very different parts of the world, with different healthcare systems, with different opportunities and availabilities, different challenges, different family dynamics and cultures to consider. In this series, unified by this one central theme of when we live beyond our blood and we're truly able to aspire for the things we want without hemophilia being such a hindrance, extraordinary things can happen. BeyondOurBlood.com is where you can go to check those out. Like On the Shoulders of Giants, Beyond Our Blood has a corresponding discussion guide. So if you would like to screen these at a patient advocacy meeting, or if you would just like to check out the discussion guide to see what we think some of the themes and lessons worth extracting and highlighting are, those resources are on the website as well. So BeyondOurBlood.com for that series, and one last time, OnTheShouldersFilm.com for the On the Shoulders of Giants film we spoke about. The World Federation Congress, we will talk about that over on the Global Hemophilia Report when it comes and goes. I'm sure something will be spoken about here on the Bloodstream podcast. But Amy, anything else you want to say about either WFH or Beyond Our Blood before we move on?
No, I don't think so. I think we've got two awesome segments coming up. We've got I'm Fine, we've got Elite Athletes, and listeners, we will be back with those right after these messages.
Genentech offers caregivers of people with hemophilia resources and stories to provide them with valuable information about a treatment option. They know your family matters and hope that this support will make your hemophilia journey a little easier. In the words of Miranda, a mother of twin boys with hemophilia, "Since connecting with other hemophilia families and educating ourselves had been so helpful, we made a point of getting involved with the larger community and attended conferences whenever we could." To learn more about Miranda and others in the hemophilia community, please visit www.treatheme.com. We're moving into I'm Fine next with Luke. Mm-hmm. And I want to highlight, you know, Luke's story, Amy, as you well know, and listeners to this pod know, has been out there for a while. And we're going to highlight that in a moment here. But what was really neat to me about asking Luke to come on right now and to talk with us in the context of the I'm Fine segment,
yeah,
is that for him, gene therapy was a treatment option that he was considering and eventually moved to, albeit within the context of a clinical trial, in order to solve some kind of problem, right?
Yeah.
In order to meet some unmet need that he was having as a result of his hemophilia. In other words, he wasn't fine.
Mm.
And he made a full decision about something that he thought would meet that need.
Mm.
Well, what do you do when you make a decision like that, in his case, move into a gene therapy trial, and it doesn't quite go as you expected?
Mm.
Or one not so fine gets solved and another, you know, emerges. How do you navigate that when it isn't as easy as I'm missing something and now I have it?
Right.
What do you do next? That was the header for this conversation with Luke.
And I do just want to say how grateful I am that the I'm Fine segment is back. We've had a little pause at the beginning of the year as we got some things in place, but we're so excited to bring I'm Fine back. And I do believe this year, I think we can announce it's going to be back with Luke Pembroke as a writer and a host.
Incredible.
Patrick will be available for some of those segments as well, but we're really excited to get back into I'm Fine. I'm Fine, y'all, aims to challenge entrenched ideas around chronic resiliency and satisfaction with suboptimal outcomes by inspiring people with hemophilia to seek education and truly consider the possibilities. Sanofi seeks to expand the idea of what's possible for the hemophilia community. Take a deeper look at the science behind hemophilia and an important connection between factor activity levels and potential activities at levelsmatter.com. Now let's get to I'm Fine.
This is all I've ever known. Is that even
possible for me?
I don't want to miss anything.
I don't need that.
I don't want to acknowledge my pain.
Fine. I don't want to get poked with needles.
I don't want that.
There's nothing wrong.
I'm fine.
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 A treatment change is no small move. Of course, the hope is always that the change will lead to better outcomes, and ideally, any change in treatment or dosing is the well-informed result of a quality shared decision-making process engaged in by the patient, their loved ones, and their medical professionals. But what happens when we make a change and don't necessarily experience the benefits we had hoped for? What if the change was particularly difficult to coordinate or set up? How does that impact the way we may feel about addressing subpar outcomes? And what if we've been rather public about this change, sharing our story on panels, webinars, through social media? Does that create additional challenges to processing and accounting for what is really going on? Now, I do want to acknowledge that being in a position to even consider a change in treatment is, in and of itself, something of a privilege, considering that there are access issues faced by people with hemophilia all around the world, and considering that the overwhelming majority of people with rare diseases have no treatment options at all. Still, for the person who has decided, I'm not fine, I'm going to make a change, only to later find themselves once again saying, uh-oh, I'm still not fine. Or, well, I was fine there for a little while, but now I'm not again. Well, this is an under-discussed topic, and something that I'm proud to welcome my blood brother from across the pond, Luke Pembroke, to join me in discussing today here on I'm Fine. Luke, my man, thanks for joining us. Pleasure to have you back on Bloodstream.
The pleasure is all mine, Patrick. Thanks for having me.
Of course. I want to dive right in, if you don't mind. So you made a decision to change to gene therapy. Now, as some listeners already know, you started gene therapy for hemophilia in the context of a clinical trial, which is admittedly a different starting point for a treatment change than if it were a commercially approved product. Do you believe in general that's a fair statement, Luke?
Yeah, in general, I think it's fair to say that.
Great. Now, I kind of want to move past the clinical trial particulars of your story and focus on your experience with the therapy from the time you started on it through now, with a focus on this idea of entrenched resiliency and the drivers of this I'm fine mindset. So, Luke, my first question is, what were your expectations of gene therapy as a treatment? And once you were comfortably onboarded to the new therapy, the rhythm, the lifestyle, once it felt like you were in it, when did you begin to question whether or not you were doing fine with gene therapy? And how are you gauging that sort of, I don't know, call it quality of life measurement?
Yeah, it's a good question. So moving past that incredibly challenging and intense first year post-dosing, my main hopes were that I'd be free from regular prophylaxis and ideally not having any bleeds. But to be honest, I didn't have any clear-cut ideas on where I'd like to be following gene therapy. I'd only known a life with severe hemophilia before, right? So sure. That adjustment to being functionally cured took some time. But I mean, a lot of that was a case of nice problems to have, right? Suddenly worrying that I hadn't done my prophy before heading out and then realizing, oh yeah, I don't need to do that anymore. Right. Things were great and I was definitely riding the high. I mean, I got in better shape. I spent 2 months living in the Amazon rainforest, hiked the Inca Trail. Then I made my way to Montreal for WFH, caught up with you.
That's right.
And then I spent those following weeks hiking in Canada's national parks. And during that whole time, my hemophilia didn't cause me any issues. Like, to be honest, it almost became an afterthought. So fast forward to autumn of that year, back in rainy England, I started to notice serious pain in my left ankle. And I mean, it was a level above the norm I'd got used to, right, Patrick? So I knew I wasn't bleeding, but I knew something wasn't right. And at first I figured it would pass and it was just a bad arthritic flare-up, been there, done that. But it didn't. And part of me hadn't really considered that my ankle could get worse after gene therapy. But that's exactly what was happening. So eventually, I decided it was time to speak to my hemophilia physio team. And a lot has happened since then. But the long and short of it is I'm in more pain on a daily basis now than I ever had been before. And I mean, I sure didn't have that on my post-gene therapy bingo card, to be honest.
No kidding, but so important to just be honest about that. So, and you've been so incredibly brave and vulnerable, and I'm not just saying that. You've been sharing your journey with gene therapy and clinical trials, and the global bleeding disorders community has eaten it up, myself included.
That being said, I'm curious, how do you think your being so public about your decision and your experiences has impacted your true sense of satisfaction with the therapy and your idea of your own lived experience? In other words, have you felt this pressure to, I don't know, be positive about gene therapy or to hide some of the harder parts? Have you been holding back? Like, tell me how you're openly sharing your story plays a role in assessing your own health and treatment satisfaction.
So I actually recall a discussion I had with my therapist about this very thing. It was about a year following having received gene therapy. And I spoke about how I felt this immense pressure to be actively advocating and sharing my experiences in relation to the gene therapy. Mm-hmm. And I felt like people really wanted to hear the headline grabbing success story, right? I did a lot of interviews with like mainstream media too, and that's all they wanted to hear. But also within the hemophilia community itself, there was an element of that. But of course, the whole gene therapy experience was so much more nuanced than that for me, and I'm sure it is for many who've been through it. I was also acutely aware of how fortunate I was to have had the opportunity to even receive gene therapy. And so I think, on a subconscious level, I was quite hesitant to be out there moaning about the not so good side of things. And I also think some people, both those I know in and outside of the community, so we're talking my normal mates, as I call them, the unaffected, there's this perception that gene therapy is the ultimate solution.
Right.
So when I started having these more serious ankle issues, it was perhaps a bit hard for people to comprehend. There was this, I don't know, possibly you've had gene therapy, so you should be fine view on things. But of course, that hasn't been the case. And I've had many opportunities to share my experiences, but they've often felt shoehorned into an agenda where people either want a positive story or a not so positive one. But of course, as I said, it's just not that black and white. So I don't feel like I've ever shied away from sharing the bad parts or the hard parts. And I mean, I've certainly been vocal about the good bits too. So I don't feel like I ever shied away from sharing the hard parts. And I've certainly been vocal about the good bits too. But over time, I felt the pressure to share so openly took me out of my own head. And I really needed to step back and focus on how I was actually doing.
So I guess, Luke, as a final question then, given everything that you've learned from this experience with gene therapy thus far, how do you intend to best self-advocate for the kind of healthcare support that you need to ensure that you are actually optimally managing hemophilia in your life?
So I think it really boils down to not ignoring what I'm feeling, which sounds simple, but of course it never really is.
No.
And acknowledging that, yes, of course, I'm lucky to have received gene therapy, but it was never going to solve all of my hemophilia-related problems. I knew that going into it, right? Now, I know my hemophilia team are still there for me. They've enforced that with me continuously. So I just need to make sure I'm confident enough to reach out to them and tell them when things aren't actually fine. And in fairness, they have been incredible. I couldn't ask for a better treatment team, but they can't treat my stubbornness. That one is definitely on me.
Yeah, well, you and me both, and I think a lot of other blood brothers and sisters share that trait as well. Well, Luke, thank you. Again, your honesty continues to inspire and, frankly, I think set a standard for how we as patient advocates ought to share about our own experiences. Listeners, if you're not already, you can follow Luke on social media. And lucky listeners, I'm happy to announce here at the end of the segment today that Luke will be joining the producing team of the I'm Fine segment here on the Bloodstream podcast in 2024. So you will be hearing his written scripts and spoken words throughout the year. And Luke, we are stoked to have your invaluable perspective join the team. So welcome, my man.
Thanks very much, Patrick. It's honestly a pleasure and a privilege to work on a segment like this. And I think it's so important that we question and challenge ourselves to make sure we're doing all we can to live as best as we can. So thank you very much to you and the Believe team for including me. And I'm really looking forward to getting stuck in and shaping this segment moving forwards.
No one, hemophilia or not, wants to make a change in their lives only to find out that the results they hoped for weren't realized. It can be discouraging and demoralizing. And you know what? That's okay. At least for a moment. It stinks to be disappointed or frustrated by a less than ideal outcome. But don't give up on yourself. And don't stop yourself from truly assessing what's going on because of some type of external pressures. You deserve better. Don't stop trying to find a path forward that's right for you. And work with loved ones and professionals in your life who can help you find it. Thanks to Luke Pembroke for joining me on today's segment, and thanks, as always, to Sanofi for supporting the I'm Fine segment here on Bloodstream. Please share this segment or episodes with friends, family, or colleagues who you think may benefit from the content, and we'll catch you next month with the latest installment of I'm Fine. Hemophilia severity is determined by factor activity levels, a measurement of how much factor you have in your blood at time of diagnosis. The more factor you have in your body over time, the better your bleed protection is, which is why many people with hemophilia choose to treat prophylactically. Your doctor can perform measurements to evaluate the factor activity levels in your blood. Learn more about the importance of factor activity levels by talking to your doctor and visiting levelsmatter.com. Sanofi aims to raise the bar for patients living with hemophilia. Reimagine what's possible by visiting rareblooddisorders.com to hear more about Sanofi's dedication to the bleeding disorders community.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Patrick. Again, Sanofi aims to raise the bar for patients living with hemophilia. Reimagine what's possible by visiting rareblooddisorders.com to hear more about Sanofi's dedication to the bleeding disorder community.
From a blood brother across one pond to a blood brother across another pond, we're now going to go to this episode's Elite Athletes with Hemophilia segment featuring my blood brother, Hazary. This too is supported by Sanofi, and I want to remind you, they seek to expand the idea of what's possible for the hemophilia community, and you can take a deeper look at the science behind hemophilia and an important connection between factor activity levels and potential activities at levelsmatter.com.
This time on Redefining Impossible, the podcast, we dive into the deep, unbounded waters of open water swimming with Hazary Aris, a 36-year-old marvel from Malaysia who refuses to let severe hemophilia A dictate the boundaries of his ambitions. With a family lineage deeply rooted in the struggle with hemophilia, Hazary has transcended his condition to emerge as a source of inspiration and encouragement for the bleeding disorders community and others facing similar battles. Hemophilia severity is determined by factor activity levels, a measurement of how much factor you have in your blood at the time of diagnosis. The more factor you have in your body over time, the better your bleed protection is, which is why many people with hemophilia choose to treat prophylactically. Your doctor can perform measurements to evaluate the factor activity levels in your blood. Learn more about the importance of factor activity levels by talking to your doctor and visiting levelsmatter.com.
My name is Hazary Aris. I am a 36-year-old with hemophilia A severe from Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. I have an elder brother with hemophilia A severe as well. I also have three uncles with hemophilia, and they are from my mom's side. I currently work with the World Federation of Hemophilia as the regional manager of Southeast Asia and Western Pacific.
Hazary's life is one marked by a relentless battle against his own body, enduring bleeding episodes twice a week, and grappling with the limitations of an on-demand treatment from a young age. Yet, within this struggle, he discovered an unlikely ally in the water, a medium where he could challenge his physical limits without the wear and tear that land-based activities imposed on his body.
Swimming is the best sport for people with hemophilia, so they sent me to swim school at a very young age, 5 years old, and I loved the water ever since.
Beneath the vast expanse of the open sky, where the horizon stretches infinitely, lies the realm of open water swimming, a discipline that marries the serenity of the sea with the raw challenge of endurance. Here, swimmers like Hasri Aris navigate not just the physical distance, but also the unpredictable embrace of the ocean itself. It's a world where tranquility meets turmoil, where beneath the glassy surface, the waters teem with the unknown. From the sudden brush of a jellyfish's sting to the shifting currents that test the limits of human stamina, open water swimming is a testament to the courage of those who dare to venture beyond the safety of the shore. It's in these unbounded waters that swimmers confront the true essence of their spirit, facing down fears, pain, and the very elements, in a dance as ancient as the sea itself.
There was one particular incident. I think it was my third swim in this infamous race in Malaysia. And I was swimming, I was already halfway through. I was nearing the beach. As I was swimming, there was one moment that I looked up. I saw something that's as huge as a basketball size figure. It's jellyfish, I think. I almost hit that thing. And as panicky as I was, I rushed forward and changed direction. I thank God every single day that I did not hit that.
With the shift to prophylaxis treatment in 2009, Hasri's life transformed, allowing him to train more rigorously and entertain the idea of competing in open water swimming, a testament to the power of modern medicine and the unwavering human spirit. Despite the serene imagery that open water swimming conjures, Hasri's journey was not without its hurdles. Developing arthritis in his ankle and elbow presented significant challenges, forcing him to rethink his approach and training methods.
In order to swim in open water sea, in open water, you need to use your legs. So that's when I had a chat with my comprehensive care team. We talk about strengthening the legs. So that's where we played with the idea of doing like a really intensive prophylaxis where I increase the dosage. And at the same time, we try to include a little bit of painkiller between during training. So we did that for a month, and to our expectation, the pain goes away. The pain went away and I was able to swim normally. And I was then able to train even more rigorously and more intensive without having pain in my ankle.
Hasri's strategy exemplifies the meticulous planning and preparation essential for anyone with a bleeding disorder looking to undertake such demanding physical activities. He navigates each training session and competition with a calculated caution, embodying the essence of adaptability and resilience. In the vast expanse of the sea, Hasri found not just a sport he loved, but a platform to advocate for greater awareness, better treatment, and the boundless potential of individuals living with hemophilia. Throughout his work with the World Federation of Hemophilia, and as a passionate volunteer, he travels across Southeast Asia, sharing his story and inspiring others.
You are able to live beyond the traditional expectation of being a person with a period. You are able to do something more than what you thought of. Even myself, I didn't think that I was able to do all this. So this, me being this physician, it allowed me to advocate for better treatment and care, better support, and also to inspire young patients, to tell them you can do whatever, you can be whatever you want.
Perhaps the most poignant of Hasri's contributions is his ability to instill hope in parents of young hemophiliacs and to demonstrate through his own achievements that with the right care, discipline, and support, the once deemed impossible becomes possible. Hasri's story is a powerful reminder that our greatest challenges can lead to our most triumphant victories. It teaches us that with understanding, preparation, and love for what we do, we can not only navigate the unpredictable waters of life, but emerge victorious, crossing unimaginable distances and achieving what we once thought was beyond our reach. This has been Redefining Impossible, the podcast, where stories of courage, determination, and the human spirit's capacity to transcend limits remind us that nothing is truly out of reach. Thanks for joining us on this episode of Redefining Impossible, the podcast. Don't forget to watch the film Redefining Impossible for free at EliteAthletesWithHemophilia.com. And thanks once again to Sanofi for sponsoring this segment. My name is Keith Korneluk, and I'll talk to you next month on Redefining Impossible, the podcast, only on Bloodstream.
Sanofi aims to raise the bar for patients living with hemophilia. Reimagine what's possible by visiting rareblooddisorders.com to hear more about Sanofi's dedication to the bleeding disorder community. Thank you, Hasri, for participating in this most recent Elite Athletes segment. Thank you, Luke, for participating in the I'm Fine segment and for coming on board as a writer and a producer going forward. As always, thank you to the listeners, and thank you to our presenting sponsor, Takeda, without whom this would not be possible. Visit bleedingdisorders.com to learn more. Thanks as well to Genentech for their support of this episode and to Sanofi for supporting I'm Fine and the Elite Athlete segments. Amy Board, we got to get on a plane. We got to go to the World Federation meeting, but we're going to keep podcasting because we can't do anything other than that. And we're going to do it again on May 10th. What do we have coming up on that episode?
We have a great episode.
Prove it.
Okay, get ready to live. So in all of this talk about blood contamination crisis, the conversation about trying to, like, how would you say it, Patrick?
I mean, I would say that the Ricky Ray Act took place here in the mid-90s, and in the United Kingdom, they're still trying to get to that level of recognition.
Recognition, yes.
Absurd.
And financial contribution to families that were affected.
Yes.
Shockingly, it's so different over there than it is in the States. We have Clive Smith and Lawrence Woolard here on the show on May 10th. Don't miss it. It's a fantastic conversation to kind of hear where they are, what are some of the updates of the blood inquiry over there, and then just like how it works. It's so different than it is over here. And the fact that patients in the UK have not been recognized for what happened is insane. So fantastic and just all around wonderful dudes. So you get to hear from Clive and Lawrence, who are like two of my favorite people. So don't miss it.
Listeners have heard both Lawrence and Clive on Bloodstream podcast before. They're very visible community members. I do want to underscore their efforts on this particular initiative because this is decades overdue. It's absurd, ridiculous, inhumane that it has taken this long. We have seen so many people pass away who deserved to be here on the day that the government recognized what they did. And because of the efforts of many people, including Lawrence, and including Clive, who's the tip of this spear in many ways. Mm-hmm. He's on the BBC. He's doing media. He is, for the general public and for many elected officials, the face of our community in the United Kingdom fighting this good fight. So from one blood brother to another, from one advocate to another, I want to commend Clive. I want to commend Lawrence. And I'm glad that we can bring their stories here through Bloodstream so that many more people within the United States and beyond know what's going on.
Absolutely. And what an eloquent, gracious leader.
Amen. Well, Amy, I'm excited for that. Glad we have that coming back on May 10th. With that, that is all for this episode. If you haven't already, we should really have a talk, but please subscribe to the Bloodstream podcast wherever you listen, even on platforms you don't.
You're going to get Clive and Lawrence. Just subscribe so it's like pops up. You
there
know,
they
it's a
are.
Thing.
Oh, it's in my phone. I didn't even have to do anything.
Yeah, it's a whole thing. And, you know, as we tell you and bug you about all the time, you can email us at mailbag@bloodstreammedia.com. You can literally email us about whatever.
You can literally email us about anything you want. We'll be more likely to respond to those that are on topic, but it's a free country and live your best life. I guess that's the end of that paragraph. So I'll just jump ahead and say, I'm your host, Patrick James Lynch.
And I'm your other host, Amy Board.
And until next time, take self-care of yourself. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.